Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Tom Goodmanson. He is the CEO of Calabrio. Tom, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate being invited.
So before we get into Calabrio and some of the areas of focus that you have, always helpful to understand a little bit of the background. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you to this role and activity.
Thank you. So I'm 30 years in the software and finance industries. And about 12 years ago, after leading various organizations throughout the U.S., I've lived in San Francisco and Minneapolis, had the opportunity to join Calabrio and lead this team in what we do. And it's been a great journey. I love the reason I joined here was in a contact center, not everybody thinks about it as the sexiest place in town, but ultimately it is a lot of data, and I'm a data junkie. All the companies I've been in have been B2B and data driven, and having access to all this big data, being phone calls and chat and email and all that, has been is a great platform to be able to build a value.
Fantastic. So data, contacts, contact tracing, call centers. Tell us a little bit about Calabrio and specifically some of the areas of focus that you've got now.
Yeah. So Calabrio, simply put, is a software technology company that provides a humanized approach to contact centers that enables outstanding customer experience. So we basically, we help our customers provide outstanding service to their customers. And in the topic that we're talking about today, it looks a lot like being able to provide in contact tracing that we'll talk about. Having a humanized approach to this is probably the most critical component that we could come up with.
So for those of you just listening in, maybe you didn't catch it, and it's not obvious in the first instance, or at least it wasn't to me, and I'm sure folks in this industry go, well, of course we do this, but it hadn't occurred to me that contact tracing had such a close alignment with call centers and the kinds of activities. Now, that's not to say it's an obvious jump, but you know, there's obviously some similarities. You've taken that and taken the insights that you have, the data in particular, and are now focusing on COVID-19 and COVID-19 contact tracing. Tell us a little bit about that journey. And I know you personally have a little bit of experience in this space.
Yeah, it was. It might not have been as obvious to me either, unless I had had a personal run with contact tracing. About 5 years ago, when the Middle Eastern respiratory, the MERS, came across, I was on a flight from London to Boston, and 24 hours after landing, found out I was sitting next to someone with the MERS virus, and very quickly recognized that it was a call center at the CDC calling me. And so when this all came along and they started talking about contact tracing, it was weirdly reminiscent, and I understood exactly how we could help in this journey, particularly with the speed with which this has had to happen. This isn't, you know, a one-time event where there's a few people that have been sickened, like have bird flu and other things that have come across. This is serious stuff.
Right. And there's a part of me that wonders, if you hadn't had that personal experience, do you think your sort of vision of this would have been as clear? Was that your sort of incremental step towards this, was actually a personal contact tracing experience?
Yeah, I think the fact that it's how humanized it needs to be is that next step, right? If somebody had called me and said, you need to do this, I think I would have connected the dots fairly quickly. But the fact, it was kind of scary getting a call from the CDC. I'm not gonna
lie. I bet.
And so the fact that we can help companies, and that's where I made the connection, was that next level humanization. One of my colleagues was on the plane with me and we both got the call. we commiserated for quite a bit. It was scary, to say the least.
I can only imagine. I mean, I wish this on anybody, but, you know, obviously that's now an increasing challenge because we've got a much broader problem. MERS wasn't quite as big, but in some respects, I'm glad you had that experience, not that you had to go through it, but it taught you a tremendous amount. It gave you some insight. And now you're bringing that to the company and the organization and the way that you're sort of applying it. So tell us a little bit about what's going on and what you've started to sort of put together.
Yeah, so ultimately, every state is putting together contact tracing in order to drive. If you're not familiar with contact tracing, for those people listening, it's simply when somebody's sick, putting and asking a lot of questions of the person that's sick to find out who they've been around, and then going to the outbound side and making sure that those who they've been around are contacted to know that they've been exposed to this disease. And so what we've put together is we have a set of tools that inside of, you know, obviously you have to be able to call or email or chat. So that's the infrastructure side.
And it's all of those, right? You're not just in one modality.
You got it. And so the component that we offer is being able to, the very first thing you have to do is, it's a 24/7 operation, getting those people scheduled. We have a scheduling algorithm called workforce management that puts the right people in the right seat at the right time. And then we do things like quality management. So once they're in that seat, they get trained through understanding how they did the last call. And then our automatic scoring allows us to very quickly find out who the good agents are, the contact tracers, and then help those that aren't as good through various training methods, whether it be sitting in on other people's calls or one-on-one coaching. But ultimately what it does is allows for a better humanized experience for the end user.
And I think, you know, based on your personal experience and what you've shared, obviously, it sounds like you can't just take anybody, put them through some contact tracing course, and, you know, there's a number of them available, and make them a contact tracer. Is that true? And if so, how do you do this? What's your sort of approach?
Yeah, the approach for us is really the tool set to give the people that are getting this set up quickly the information for what's going on, and knowing who is excelling and who is not doing as well, in order to provide not to overuse a word, but I really believe in the humanization of technology.
Right.
And so giving that human touch, going back to my experience, the person that talked to me was empathetic. They gave me many resources to be able to find out who to talk to if I did get sick. They knew that it was a scary thing, so they called me down to be able to tell them who I'd been around, because ultimately,
right,
I had been from London to Boston to Minneapolis in that same period that they were calling me. So there was they had to say that there was the next flight had to be called as well. So it's just an interesting set of dynamics that go on.
So I think the humanistic part is really important, and I know not to overemphasize it, but you're applying technology and data to this, and it sounds like there's sort of a background activity that's helping elevate this so that the experience is more human. I don't think you can just throw technology at it. It's the combination.
Absolutely. You've got, you take this and you start to see, you know, from the technology standpoint, we can start to spot hotspots by tracing where they're calling from and all of that stuff. So that's easy mapping.
So you even use data from the phone inbound information as well.
Exactly. And so you're able to start saying, is this a hotspot? And then you overlay that with other components of what was the tone? Was it a positive or negative sentiment that happened during that call? How scared might they be based on that positive or negative sentiment? And so you can start to understand, is there a certain set of contact tracers that are easing people versus making more anxiety? because we know the one thing that we've seen and that has been going on contact tracing forever is you have to have a level of trust for somebody to say, who have you been around for the last 7 days?
Right. These are not sort of random questions. It's kind of really personal. And
And potentially, there's a lot of writing out there and what have you that says that there's a subset of the population that doesn't want to. They think that this information's being given out or used against them. And so being able to assure them that this is a highly secure methodology and the technology is not being in there to spy on anyone, it's there to help them. And it is being treated with all the caution that any of your health data would be.
So let's dive in a little bit, if we can, into the technology piece. And I think there were some interesting elements to that I think are really useful in this. And you talked about sentiment analysis. So it sounds like you've got, both the GPS location, so overlaying that, I think people can understand that. But how do you tell what somebody's mood is over the phone?
So at Calabria, we have a proprietary piece of technology that uses machine learning and AI to listen. We turn every call into a transcript, and that transcript is then run through the engine, and we use various methods to look at whether it was an overall positive or negative, or if there were periods of positivity and negativity in it. And we don't, a lot of technology uses, they kind of, if there's one positive sentiment, one negative sentiment, they'll mark the call as neutral. And so the positives have to outweigh the negatives. We instead break the call down and determine whether there were positive parts or negative parts. And then if there were, the example I always use is if you were calling me and how was your experience? And I said, just great. Well, those two words alone would be a positive sentiment. And if you kept listening to the call and said, just great, you screwed it up again. What we do is package that entire sentence rather than so many of the technologies only clip one and two words. We're right. Clipping sentences and saying that's a negative and with sarcasm, which sometimes looks like the opposite.
Right. And what else is going on? What other kinds of technology are underlying this whole exchange?
You know, it's the quality management side is one of the key components. And this is the AI and machine learning that I'm talking about actually helps drive that. In a typical and traditional contact center, only about 2% of calls are listened to for that quality.
What, you mean that message that we hear on every single call, this message, man, it's only 2%?
Well, it is recorded, but only
I get that.
Yeah, only 2% of those actually get listened to.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And so when in our technology, we're listening to 100% of them and applying tools like this machine learning to drive an understanding of how the overall quality of your contact center is or your contact tracing center is. And that allows for a broader breadth and ultimately, we believe, a better experience.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Tom Goodmanson. He is the CEO of Calabrio. We were just talking about the underlying technology for the whole calling process, the analysis, the essentially what I just heard was 100% analysis of those calls using some automated tools that provide additional insights as well as all the other data. One of the questions, and certainly we've heard this in the general discussion forums, is, well, we've got technology. Let's just use a technology solution to this. I'm just going to track your phone and we'll know where Tom's been. We don't need all of this. What do you think?
You know, theoretically, it's great as a technologist. It's sounds like a great tool. As a human being, it sounds a little scary. and I think the world...
Well, you've read 1984, have you?
Right. Yeah, I was actually alive then. If you look at the statistics, and we're getting more and more to, if the security is around it, people are more comfortable. But if the peer numbers are, at least 60% of the people have to have the technology loaded. So that means that only about 80% have phones, first of all. So you have to have a good majority, six of eight there. And recent statistics say only about 30% would allow you to have that on their phone. So
yeah, I think that's overstating the mark based on the Singapore experience, but that's a whole other story. So the reality is we can't, but you know, obviously technology gives us some additional capabilities. Tell us a little bit about how you scale this, because I think one of the challenges we're seeing is, I don't want to quote the number because it will be out of date the second I quote it in terms of the numbers of cases just in the US and obviously worldwide. Mm-hmm. But it's expanding and rapidly. That obviously creates a huge challenge. How do you go about this?
Like they say, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? I think that's about as well as you can think, is what you find the best place to put them. So is it city, state, bigger region? What is it? I think that's all dependent. New York City has their own, whereas Minnesota has it at the state level, but there are fewer people in Minnesota than there are in the city of New York. And you have to decide where is that center going to sit that is going to be most effective. Then you have to figure out there's studies out there again that say that you should have approximately 30 contact tracers for every 100,000 residents. And so you do the math and say, okay, New York City should be 10,000-ish agents, 5 to 10,000 agents, and you start to recruit. Who do you get in there to get in and go? But then you've got to, at the same time, have the technology up and ready to go for them to take those inbound calls and then start making those outbound calls to the folks that were exposed.
Now, you're a data guy. I've got to ask you about that. So that number, you know, obviously a guide, I get that. But one of the inputs to that must be incidents. Or is it just a guess based on?
No, it's a study. I believe it was the CDC, along with one of the large universities, came out with, given the rate of, it's right, a whole mathematical equation, given the rate of exposure and all of the rate of infection, how many it would take to capture all the inbound calls.
Capture, right. Okay. You've got personal experience and obviously, you know, delighted, successful outcome. Do you have any sort of learning experiences and experiences you can share of how this has been going and anything that's come out of that you go, gosh, I didn't think about that going in?
You know, it's still the early days. As you know, we were a little behind. It would have been great to be having this conversation in February. To be honest, I think we would all agree that there's a lot of places that, you know, sooner action would have been better.
Right.
But in the early days, it comes down to what I think we all knew intuitively and with my experiences is that human touch, having a bedside manner. I don't think people were as clued in and are now clued into how well you have to train your people to do this humanistically and to drive people to be open up and talk about themselves in a total state of, you know, frankly, emergency, physical emergency.
And do you think we're equipped to be able to take this on? I mean, is this What's the path for our country?
I think we're absolutely equipped to take it on. I think you've got the convergence of a lot of highly skilled people out of work. So if you said you had to have 100,000, 200,000 contact tracers in the U.S., it's an unfortunate situation, but there are many motivated people that want to work. So you've got a ready pool of employees. You're seeing the sentiment of let's help each other change. I won't get too personal, but I think there was a level of in the early days of a little bit of, because we didn't understand it, there was a lot of people not taking it as seriously.
Right.
I think we've jumped that very thoroughly.
Let's hope so. Because we're in big trouble if that's not the case.
Absolutely. So,
and how do you work? Because, you know, contact tracing is, you know, that's a public health mandate. It's requires a little bit of legislative support because you're diving into access information. You talked about that privacy, obviously, you know, taking that very seriously, assuring. But how do you work in conjunction with those groups on a national and local basis? What's your sort of mode of operation?
Our mode of operation is the way it is with all of our customers. We listen to what the needs are. Here, it's interesting because we're starting to have experience and expertise across the country that we can guide the early, because we've been in some of the early. And so as those that are just spinning up now, we're able to bring those learnings to them. But honestly, it's a lot the way like we treat our customers today. We listen to what they need to do. We've always done it in a secure way. We've got many retail outlets that use our software that store credit cards. We've got a lot of healthcare that stores health data. So we understand our responsibility in that very, very deeply. And that experience has helped our new contact tracing customers give them the level of comfort using our product and helping them understand and tell their constituents, those that are looking at it, and the oversight bodies, the legislative oversight bodies, to understand that this is a secure and well-used and trained methodology.
So for clarity, essentially you become an extension of these organizations, and you're there and available to be able to deliver contact tracing as a, call it outsourced. I mean, that's essentially what it is, but you're really an extension of the organization in the same way that you've been doing that in other circumstances with the same kind of levels of security and, you know, almost seamless, I would imagine.
Yeah, we've seen very few. We haven't had to write any custom software. We haven't had to customize any more than, you know, we don't write custom software. We have a software suite that is used throughout the world. We have, you know, 6,000 customers around the world, and these people are using it the same way as those current customers, just in an urgent and important public health way.
So in the last couple of minutes, tell us, where do you see this going, and what do you think is in the future of this? I mean, I know this is a long-standing activity. We're not sort of talking about something new, but, you know, how do we get better at it? How do we apply new methods, new capabilities?
I think in short, we need to just learn. We need to use this machine learning and AI that's coming out of it. And we need to share. The biggest thing we can do, we can't get too parochial when it comes to, if New York's doing a great job, we should be sharing it worldwide, right? We need to take best practices and take the political out of the process and make this a truly a public health outcome. We've seen when we come together and share best data, we start to win in past public health crises. You can take AIDS, these things have been used for years,
right?
But they haven't been the same level of transmission rates. We have to rapidly help each other to get to the end, because we're still, there's nobody that doesn't think that we're a ways off from the solution. And this is going to be a key way to keep us safe and understanding where we're at. And we're proud to be at the center of trying to help the public health.
Fantastic. And, you know, I just want to sort of wrap up here and say that one of the silver linings to this COVID-19 is that message of community and pulling together is what I have heard pretty much 100% from almost every guest that I've had post this crisis. And, you know, the fact that people are verbalizing it, I think, is a testament to human nature and human will. So I agree with you completely. Unfortunately, as usual, we've run out of time. So just remains for me to thank you for joining me. Fascinating, great work, I think, tremendously important. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Dr. Nick. This has been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.